on as we're in the planning stages of this school, and it helps with that process.
I'm Mike Frank, I'm one of the science teachers, also the science department, and I was involved with this since we started thinking about building this.
I'm Rayleigh May, this is my third year here at Empire High School. I teach world history, and I came over from the other high school when they had available, but I was a student since I was at the other high school down the road, communication with my department head about lots of things going on here and helped even come up with the name for the school. So I've been a part of Empire.
I'm Melinda Jensen, I'm a math teacher here at Empire High School. I've been here as part of the planning committee, so I've been here since the inception.
My name is David Schingler. I'm an English teacher here, second year here at Empire.
So we've got sort of a range of people that have been here since before I've been here with the planning, and then David was hired on last year and he's done an outstanding job coming in. We're going to kind of run through a couple of things of just, you know, why we did this, and get into give you a little bit of information about the school. And then we wanted this sort of to be an open Q&A session so that you can ask questions if you're thinking about doing this, you know, rather than us giving a whole bunch of information that you may not want or not need. You know, we wanted to be able to answer the questions that you have about it. So just to give you some background, though, on where we are. Originally, the school was planned out with in the planning stages. It was decided that it was going to be a much smaller high school. Our neighboring high school, Seneca High School, has about 1,700 kids. Empire was designed for 750. And it was also decided in the early stages that we were going to try this for the one-to-one initiative. With this process, some of the things that really stood out of why you know, Mr. Baker, our superintendent, and our governing board wanted to do this was the biggest one that stands out, the most of you probably heard this this morning, was the 21st century skills. You know, that's something that's really important to us. We want our students to, when they're leaving our school, we want them to have the skills necessary to be successful, whether that's going into the workforce, whether that's going on to secondary school, colleges or universities, or some type of training program. We also really wanted to increase student engagement and to make the instruction much more relevant to what our kids are using right now. I mean, you guys know this. Our kids have cell phones, they have iPods, they have iPhones. They're doing these things anyways. And so there's sort of been that barrier between, you know, sort of a student's world at home and a student's world at school. And so we really wanted to blend those two things. You know, so that's really why we got into it. It was not to increase test scores. That's the question that stands out the most. And some of you may have that question as well. But it really was not to increase test scores. Now, having been open for, you know, we're in our fourth year now, we've been, this is our second year with an excelling label. We've met AYP. Our students are doing very well. I'm very hesitant to say, though, and I want this to stand out in the presentation, that our computers, you know, made the difference with that. Because I truly don't believe that it's our teachers that are making that difference. The computers are just a tool to be used in the classroom, and they're a very helpful tool and can help in that process. But when it comes down to it, it's that really good instruction that makes the difference with that. That's a little bit of sort of why, you know, we went in this direction. When we went through that process and when I was hired on and we kind of looked at this and we said, all right, now that we know that we're doing this, we've got our school being built, how are we going to plan for this? And, you know, originally, I think there was a group of eight teachers that were actually hired on before I was that went through and sort of started this process not only setting up the design of the school for how the school was going to look physically, you know, working with tech and how it was going to be designed so that it could be a wireless school. You know, everybody had that sort of initial, you know, understanding of what was going to take place here. So I know that's different than I think most of the situations that are that people are in today. Everybody coming into Empire High School knew how we were going to be doing this and wanted to be a part of that. It was a very, you know, exciting process. And if you guys want to sort of chime in on your involvement in that, you know, feel free. But it wasn't a, you know, a shift in trying to change what people were already doing in the classroom that I know some people were looking to go through this process, you know, might come up against. So that really wasn't a battle for us. We continued with that because everybody knows, you know, what we're doing here. So when they apply to our school, you know, one of the part of our interview process is, do you know about our school? What do you know about our school? And if you don't already know this, here's what we're doing. And if you want to be part of it, you know, we want you to jump right in. It doesn't mean that you have to have all of those skills. You know, a good teacher doesn't need to have the technology background. That's something that we can build up. So it's, while it's something that we think about when we're hiring, it's not the only thing we think about. So, you know, again, in that process, once we decided, you know, who we were going to be hiring, and how we're, you know, after we had hired everybody and how we were going to be running, we kind of brought everybody in. And initially, we started off with some Apple trainings. We had Apple, we hired them to come in and kind of go through things with us. And feel free to express, you know, how you guys, how that worked.
Our experience was less than satisfactory with that. They wanted to teach us how to do things like open up iPhoto and create new documents, where to save things on the computer, stuff like that. Most of us had already been using, even though we weren't really in the same situation as our previous schools, most of us were already using technology to the extent that we had access to the tools. This just gave us a great opportunity to take that further. To do things that, you know, most of us had access to a projector, had our own computers and stuff, but with putting those in the hands of the students just opened things up even more. So we were most of us, for the most part, were a little bit beyond where the Apple trainers that came in following them.
And that's, you know, something that you've got to kind of gauge where your teachers are. What we found and what we continue to find when we're looking at training and doing professional development is that, you know, it's better for us to use, you know, to look in-house and identify those key people that have been doing things that stand out and using them, you know, to facilitate instruction.
Is there a reason why you chose Apple versus a PC?
You know, looking at Apple, we've historically been an Apple district. You know, I think some of the reasons, you know, why were, you know, there's less problems with viruses and things of that nature. I wasn't in the initial decision making within the district to go with Apple. I know when we were looking at the computers, we did look sort of across the board. The does tend to be a little bit more expensive, and that's something that we deal with annually when we go through. And then we look at, you know, is this something that we want to continue only using the Apple? And up to this point, that's what we do. I don't want to say that that's all we'll ever use, though.
Do you go back and forth with Windows, or are you just strictly Apple?
Just strictly Apple.
Although we do have Microsoft Office on all the student computers, so
we use PowerPoint, Word, and Excel. We don't use, well, some students use Keynote, but I couldn't tell you how to use it.
More basic.
So the students have access to the Microsoft.
Yeah, we bought a license for all of the students.
And our feeling on that, again, was training them for going forward. That's the most commonly used Office program still
Why you went to Apple, because that's what a lot of school districts, I'm sure, are faced with. Is, well, we want to go to Apple, but how do you transition that, because we're all used to using Windows in this, you know,
word processing.
So,
You know, my opinion on that, though, too, and, you know, feel free to chime in, but if you're, you know, I don't know if it's so much a specific program. You know, if you're getting on and you're able to do a variety of things, whether it's a PC or an Apple, I mean, while they look different and they're set up differently, I think a lot of those skills are transferable, by the way.
I think kids are very flexible and versatile, not only in the language, but moving back and forth between the two environments, they do it seamlessly.
But it is more costly.
Yep, and that's something. And, you know, with the training, I mean, there's you know, another amount that we save by looking, you know, in-house at our own teachers, rather than choosing to bring somebody in. It's cheaper for us. Our teachers are much more bought into what we're doing with that. And honestly, they're, from what we've seen, and I don't want to stand up here and knock Apple, because everybody, you know, does things differently. So I don't want to say that, like, it's an Apple thing, you know, with whatever program that you use. You know, there are times that it's great to bring somebody in to help you with that process. And I don't want to say that everything that Apple did for us was bad. You know, I just think that for us, it made more sense to use the teachers that we had. And that might be different for everybody.
And I think their experience, too, was going into schools that were transitioning and taking teachers that were not necessarily used to type. And so they weren't really prepared for who we were at that point because, you know, in the early stages, we were all very...
Yeah, there's a lot of schools that teachers don't want anything to do with technology, so that's probably what they were gearing towards.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're sending people out to get trained, and then they would come back and train the rest of the campus, or they just knew
Sometimes. It
and then they shared it?
We have sent people to different trainings, although I don't know that we've really done too much technology-wise. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, as a school, we send people to conferences all the time, you know, across the board. But, you know, specifically when we're looking at, you know, the tech development, it's not something that we rely heavily on. A lot of times what we'll do is someone will have an interest, they'll jump right into it and really develop that skill or work, you know, with that.
Look at the cool stuff I've
done. Yeah.
And right. And then it's the sharing. And from there, it's just sort of, you know, came across to everybody else. And I'll tell you how that impacted sort of what we've done as an overall school with our management system with that. You know, for finding resources, in the very beginning, this is one that, you know, that we were nervous about. You know, you'd be base everything off of the state standards, and within our district, we have everything sort of calendared out. And so from there, it was just a matter of finding what worked, because we started off with absolutely no textbooks. And we continue to have no textbooks, except for our upper-level math classes right now. There are a couple of classes that we do use some textbooks for. But as far as finding resources, you know, our teachers jumped in and spent time doing that. You guys want to, you know, talk about that process and how you select what you use?
It was tough when we were new because we had a lot of vendors come to us that wanted to sell us their resources, so we had a lot to evaluate at first. And I think our first year we maybe bought more than we needed because we weren't sure. And then over the years we've just kind of narrowed that list down a little bit to what we like and what we don't like. And it's an ongoing process. We try not to lock ourselves into anything.
Yeah. A large bulk of what we use, though, is feature generated. That we write it ourselves. We go out and find and evaluate the websites. If you want the websites, you have to write a lot of the content. Just start with the students.
I know, as a history teacher, I love not having a textbook. I'm not driven by chapters. I'm not driven by, you know, questions at the back of the book. I'm driven by content and what I need and what I want, my objectives that I want my students to have. So I just, you can find so many great primary source resources, and it you have the opportunity to actually dive your students into the learning as opposed to opening the book and reading it black and white. I mean, I don't even know if I could go back to teaching with a textbook ever again. And we have online resources. We have, for history, we have ABC Clio. That's what we use. And it's really quite nice. They have a lot of primary sources, a lot of secondary sources. But it's just a resource when I need to give my students some extra, and they know how to use it and search, and they use it as a resource as well. So it's not definitely doesn't look like your traditional history class where it's like, okay, go home and read the chapter and read the questions and tomorrow we'll talk about it. It's a lot more teacher-driven and a lot more, really have to know your stuff. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I mean, and that's with hiring. You have to, those of your administrators, the teachers really have to be very comfortable with their content because there's a lot of times we just have to create it ourselves.
ABC-CLIO?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ABC-CLIO is a...
CLIO.
Great.
ABC-.
Great resource used. It started off, I think, a couple of our teachers were using it, and then it sort of became the primary source for our history.
They have around, they have American history, government, U.S. at war, world geography, U.S. geography, world history, ancient, world history, modern, and some others that I don't even use because I don't teach those areas, but and all of our students have access to that no matter what class they're in. It's a site license that we buy to view that site, and it's every time, like when last year I taught a medieval history elective, and I had previously in the past gone out and made old copies and created my own little, you know, like you would see at college, your own little spiral book at the other high school, and then I went to ABC Clio and I just started randomly searching for all the primary sources that I use, and they were all there, and so I didn't have to waste all this paper anymore. I just made a research list, as they call it, and becomes my own little chapter. So I create my own little books and my own chapters on that site. So it's a really pretty neat site, and they use a lot of teachers and a lot of really well-minded academic guys that I've had the opportunity to meet that really know their stuff to write the material. So.
In fact, our department head, Jeremy Gibson, was working for that.
Do you have a bunch of websites that normally just correlate right to your curriculum?
There's no one website that correlates to our curriculum. There are lots of websites that correlate to different parts of our curriculum.
Yes, that's something that takes up a lot of our time when you're developing a class, so the first time you're going through it. Unfortunately, most of the other subjects don't have it as easy as social studies.
But we can get lost. I mean, there's been hours where I freely admit I've spent 5 hours of time, as you all probably experienced, searching for the right activity, and then you realize your evening is gone. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely, I use my summer very wisely to search.
Yeah, looking at the four main content, core areas, social studies, ABC-CLIO is the one that has just sort of stood out for us. As far as the others, no, there's not been one, and it's really, I think, each teacher uses different resources in the other subject.
Yeah, there's a lot of science content online, but a lot of it is either at too low a level or it's more college level, so it kind of depends on the class. We go out and we find the pieces that fit best with what we're trying to do at that time, so it varies a lot from one class to another. It varies a lot from one topic to another within the class. So
what is your favorite website, though, for science?
Well, I teach biology. The best ones that I've found that I keep going back to again and again, but still I can only use it for part of one quarter, is DNAI.org, DNAinteractive.org. It's produced by the Dolan Learning Center, which is the educational outreach arm of Cold Spring Harbor Labs, which is one of the top molecular biology labs, public research institutes. And they have a lot of just good online content that's multimedia, interviews with a lot of the scientists who are involved with a lot of the breakthroughs that are discussed on there, tutorials about a lot of the techniques and a lot of the science. But they also have a lot of teacher resources that are produced also. So offline activities and things that you can do in the class that teach the concepts and the techniques.
And also for English, you go on the internet and it's just like garbage can of English sometimes. Again, you have to use it to like what you want to kind of further your course and what you're trying to teach. So like one of the things at the school is we emphasize MLA, that's our formatting style. So out at Purdue, it kind of reinforces and it's a quick reference for the kids for all those format. So I know me, I use Thompson Gale a lot with my seniors for literary theories, and we can just go on there and they can actually research. Like big college, like, I don't know, in college we have the big books that we have to actually go through and research like that. Well, with Thompson Gale, it's right at your fingertips. And again, I like Dr. Frank was saying, you know, we get lost sometimes. You just have to find the material that kind of fuels what you're trying to teach.
Yeah, EBSCO Host is
EBSCO Host, yes.
Research.
Yeah.
So what subscriptions do you actually have, and what percent would you say of your resources do you pay for, and how much are free?
I'd say a lot of them are free. You know, as far as sites that we pay for, ABC Clio, EBSCO Host,
Thompson Gale.
Yeah, as far as science, are there what ones to be?
That's about it.
I think most of the
95% of what we use is just free.
We pay for Turnitin.com.
Turnitin is a very powerful tool.
I don't know how many people are using Turnitin. Turnitin is a great resource for not for every subject area, but for science, social studies, and English especially. It has the plagiarism piece in there. It also has a way for teachers to give feedback right on the documents and submit it back to the students. Kids can submit their documents directly into Turnitin. You can set up timelines for when due dates are, or when the cutoff is going to be. It's a great resource.
You said your higher level math uses textbooks. What about your ELL or your special ed? Any of those use anything, or what do they use on that?
We're an inclusion school, so we don't have there. We do have some adaptive classes, but it's very limited. And so for like social studies, I modify.
What about for like your MR kids? Where are they also out in inclusion, or are they?
Every student.
It really depends on the student's ability and disability, and also, you know, with parents, how parents and the school place that should be best set up. I mean, there's some kids that should be in a classroom for the social aspect of it, not for the content.
Do you not have any self-contained classes at all?
We are looking at developing a self-contained an EVP program for students, but it's not something that we currently have right now.
And I've taught in this district for 7 years, and so I am always getting. As social studies, it's the one class usually that's the major inclusion class that they are really low performing students or just their ability's not quite there. And so I get to know the student. I work with the case manager. We understand what their capabilities are, and it's a lot of modification. And we have some really great parapros that work with the teachers. They're phenomenal at the school, and we work to what's best. I do happen to have a copy of, I forget the name now, but it's a McDougall-Littell publication that's about a fourth grade reading level that I do pull from for those students. And I just scan copies and I post it on my alternate website, which I'll talk about later. I have a resource site that on the front, you can't tell the difference until you get into the content, and then you actually see that there's, scanned pages of a different book. Because ABC Clio is a higher level reading. I mean, it's not ninth grade. I teach ninth graders, and it's like 12th grade. And so, really, those kids are getting pushed. And so, if I have a student that's like fourth grade reading level, I might actually go through and modify. And ABC Clio knows I do this. And in fact, a couple teachers, they actually want to pay us, to have a resource portion of their site, because we go through, we simplify the words in a Word document, and then so it's a little extra work, but it's worth it to get to those students that really need that. Or, like for example, I have some auditory, very, very high auditory learners. This is where the computer's awesome. They can plug in their headphones, the computer can read it to them. And they just go to the website and they click on the whole passage and they get it read to them, and they learn that way. And then you can sit down and orally go over a test with them, and they'll give you the answers and tell you the whys, and they know. It's just they can't, because of maybe just serious dyslexia or whatever, they just can't put the words together, but if they hear it, they know it. And so that's where the computers have been, and ABC, but that's been really awesome.
As far as the special education piece too, you know, and this not only applies to special education, but across the board. For some students, having a computer is that tool that enables them to do sort of break down the barriers that they've had in front of them. And for other students, it is a barrier. And it's not necessarily because they can't figure out the tech aspect of it. That's not the issue. The issue is the distraction. where, you know, you may have students too, and you can say the same thing about a pencil. That pencil could be their tool for everything. It could be a huge distraction. So, and again, that just applies to all kids in general. And so we're going to talk about this in a minute too. It does sort of change the dynamics of the classroom as far as classroom management.
Yeah.
You mentioned certain content areas, excluding math, for instance, but you mentioned plagiarism.
Yes.
With the computer system, technology, Word, Excel, all of them, it's so easy to cut and paste.
Absolutely.
It's easy to find.
But it's easy for us to see that.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that interfere, or has it just become part of their quotations with the, to reach their level of understanding in your lesson, or how do you deal with that?
Especially with our use of Trainin.com, after the first week, they understand how it works. They can even check their own work to see whether or not it's showing up as somebody else's work. So it goes away pretty quickly.
So there is stuff that you can do to match up towards cutting and pasting they're doing?
Trainin.com goes through, and it will, you essentially get submitted through this website, and that website checks with every other website on the internet, anything that's been publicized, that's been put on the internet, including students' papers that have been submitted before. So, and then it breaks it down and it gives you percentages of, you know, how many other students within that class may have used a similar sentence. Or, I mean, it's pretty good. Now, with that too, though, I mean, we all know that we also have students that share information, and in most cases we want them to do that. We want them to sit down and work together. So there has been a couple situations where we've really, you know, where I, you know, myself and a couple teachers have either gotten together and really need to weed through whether was this really cheating? Was it a matter of students working together? Was it a matter of, you know, not citing properly? But it's an excellent tool for kids to have that feedback right away. I mean, they see it. There's no getting away with it. Can't buy papers online anymore. And then just the last point on here, computer usage, and we'll talk about this too. When we first opened up, and if you're looking at moving to this, there are going to be teachers that absolutely stand out, and there are going to be teachers that struggle with it. It's a process. And we have, when we started, and we continue to say, you need to decide what's best for your classroom. You know, and we share ways to have so that people can sort of see what happens across the, you know, in the other classrooms. One of our goals this year is that each teacher will observe three other teachers, because everybody does it a little bit differently, and so they fill out a reflection sheet on that process. But there's nobody saying you have to use this, you have to do it this way. That's something that, you know, that we, Cindy Lee, who is the principal that opened up the school, and myself, we both, you know, we want to give that freedom to teachers to use what's best in the classroom. Some things that we think about. Take a second. I won't read you the questions, but just take a second. Read those questions and think about them, because these are things that we look at and think about. Not only every year when we're planning, but on a daily basis in most cases.
Would you mind reading them for
Sorry. How do you select resources and make them available to the students? How do you ensure that students are on task? Mm-hmm. And how do you integrate the necessary technology skills with content standards? As you probably know, if you're a teacher or administrator, you look at the standards that we are expected to teach, and without even looking at technology, you can't get through every one of those standards. It's impossible. And I would love to meet the person who can. It's just not feasibly possible. So how do you ensure that you are, you know, teaching those skills that the kids need to have? This is something that we've struggled with. We started off in an approach when we first opened up, and it's kind of changed in that process. It's kind of interesting too. All of our teachers are standing in the back of the room right now. I don't know if you guys are doing that, so I'm just up here by myself.
Yeah.
Or if that's actually where they are typically teaching now, and that's usually where We have a couple bulbs burned out on our projectors right, which is why this one isn't up and running, but their computer is usually in the back of the room. And classroom management, they are typically in the back of the room so that they can walk around and look at computers, make sure kids are on the right sides.
Yeah, you can't spend your whole time standing up in the front of the room.
I have a question about, I teach band, so how does it work integrating with technology stuff into non-core subjects like PE, band music?
PE, they don't really use it a whole lot, but I know for band, especially on a computer, they have GarageBand, and there are programs that they use for the learning of music and all of those. I mean, so the technology has been, that is get used from what I understand from our band in that. And then they can also post up music. I know that just recently our drum line, because we have a drum line here, as soon as the music was, we had the audio of the music, the instructor posted so the kids could start hearing what the music sounded like before they actually started playing it. I know when we were in D.C., we had a drumline person with us, and they didn't have their computer with them, and they were frustrated that they couldn't go back to the pedal and listen to the music, and so they had to come in, and one of the teachers had one, so they came in and listened to it. So it can be used. It's just figuring it out what you could do to make that delivery available. You know, there's so many different things you can think of.
I think it goes back to, though, I mean, is it relevant for you to be using it in your classroom? And if it is?
Yeah, we're looking at best use of the technology, not constant use of technology.
I'm curious to know, like in science and math, when you come to your roots, if you have to see the student's thought process, solving equations.
We do use paper.
Yeah.
I saw that.
So.
Yeah.
We do use paper.
Yeah. We do real hands-on labs. We do have books available sometimes.
We do have the old-fashioned turn-in paper and handout. You know, there paper still needs to be used for something because you still need to see that tangible handwritten.
Well, it's identified when you're solving.
Working it out.
It's especially if you're moving through. You're going to help them. I will say
at the beginning with math, we started off trying to have them type some of those things because, you know, learning how to use equation editor and how to make things look right, you know, typing and that's a skill that we wanted them to have. But they were so caught up in math that they weren't thinking about the math, they were thinking about how to make equation editor work. And then they were skipping steps, you know, the math teacher skipping steps in the problem even on paper. So pretty much all of their math knowledge is done on paper.
Yeah. It's interesting that the first year, and I've seen this especially with our teachers who have been here since day one. The first year, there was almost that sense of, we've got to use it for everything. And it's totally not the case. In our second year, a lot of our teachers went back and was like, oh my God, why did I do it this way? Because this isn't working. So I'm going to go back, you know, I'm going to have my kids use a notebook rather than typing out their notes.
Yeah, sometimes the most appropriate use of the technology is put your laptops away. And now we're going to do this.
And for projects, I do a lot of various different projects in my classroom and activities. And I tell it, and I open it up to, you know, whatever the students. I give them a wide range of things from your traditional poster to, you know, a iMovie or whatever, you know. So it depends on what technology they know. And I always say, if you don't know how to use it, you only have 2 days. So, you know, don't waste 2 days trying to figure it out. Do what you know. That's the point is giving the material, giving the information, and presenting your knowledge. Not, wow, I'm really cool with this technology. So it's using it to its best potential.
What type of simulation software or even digital games do you use, and even virtual worlds is Second Life?
Lots. It's really fun. BBC has a lot of online interactive games, and so it's really fun when I put on my blog, yes, your child is supposed to play games tonight. Because they'll like these interactive games like Napoleon Battle of Waterloo, and they have to try to see if they can be smarter than Napoleon, or Pandemic, which is a simulation, and we were talking about the Black Plague epidemic, so they got to play that and try to kill the world. And so there's lots of really, there's great things out there. There's also bad things out there. So you have to really look at it beforehand and go, is this useful? Is this going to benefit them in an understanding? But there's lots of, especially for social studies. And I know there's some really cool stuff for some of the sciences, but I find every year more and more really neat stuff that I get to use and with my kids. So.
David, as far as English, is most of the stuff that you're using right now, is it sort of resource material?
Right. Yeah, it's just, it's a supplementary material to computers. The kids still have bell work. They go in my classroom, they have all their journals. They come in, they do that. They get the bell work off of the computer on my blog. They come in, right now we're reading A Streetcar Named Desire, so they know when they're done with the bell work, let's open up our books, let's read it in the class. And then we will go back and answer questions on a study guide that is posted to the blog. But a lot, what you'll see is a lot of students, like, they'll print and they'll actually handwrite it. And so that's fine. At least we're giving them that material that they have a choice. Either I can print it or I can do it on my computer. And usually what I do is I give my students a choice. You know, you can submit it through turnitin.com or you can print it and give it to me. So again, I use it in the English curriculum as a supplementary material to what I'm trying to teach, to enhance what I'm teaching. It's not a total reliance upon the computer or the programs. So,
I think you
can. Yeah, I have two questions. Do you offer wireless printing so students can send their
papers? Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And we have two stations on campus, one in our tech department and one in our library.
Oh, so, so not in every classroom?
Not in every class, no.
Teachers have?
Teachers have access to any printer on campus. We have one in the teacher work area in the back, front office, tech department, library,
copy.
And then
copy. Even the copiers are wireless.
Copier, and then some teachers have printers.
We have to, like, some departments have a department printer for certain things, for color copies.
Well, my second question, I'm a librarian, so I was gratified to see that you do have a library.
Absolutely.
With all of the assigned computers, are we still teaching how to use indexes and multi-volume sets and do research, you know?
All the time, yes. All the time.
Kind of both ways, yeah?
For a lot of research papers, actually, I know that for research paper for social studies is done the junior year, so I don't actually, except for my honors class, don't do that. But I know that they limit, and you can only have so many websites, so they still have to have traditional book resources as well, and not just all websites.
For journals, I know our subscriptions to EBSCOhost is a huge one that gets used for a lot of our research.
So your two databases are EBSCOhost and ABC Clio?
ABC Clio is a social studies database.
Thompson Gale for?
That's an English, I would say. Well, it's literature. Yeah, literature resource.
Yeah,
articles, research. There's a lot of different features on Thompson Gale that you can use, that you can use on EBSCOhost, and it's nice to have both of them because you can just switch back and forth. But, yeah.
I'm the math teacher, and we're talking about the social study, English, everything. What's about math? As we know, computer notation is completely different than traditional book notation. Student needs to know both, in my opinion. How do you guys with the note-taking and problem-solving?
Note-taking, problem-solving is done by hands.
By hands. Mm-hmm. This is what I was thinking about.
Yes.
So I assume what I was thinking about making lesson, students have to take traditional way notes, and at home submit their homework during computer and test over computer.
So they view the problems for the by math classes, and well, the math classes, we deliver them using a PDF document,
mm-hmm.
and so they view the problems on their computer, but then they work it out.
Do they have
paper.
The song?
Mm-hmm. A lot of.
But we do have.
Yeah, no.
Do you have
a Geometer Sketchpad on all the students' computers?
Was it
Geometer Sketchpad?
Uh huh.
So we can use that for,
yeah, that's,
you know,
mm-hmm.
that's a good one that we've got everywhere. And then we also, a lot of times, use web resources as kind of catch-up or tutorials for the kids that get extra help.
Do you have any favorite websites on?
I don't know that you haven't heard of.
I
go back to Purple Math a lot for some
mm-hmm.
reason. It's just
you just like to
really
find
well.
Something matching and
mm-hmm.
save on the PDF.
My first year, and I don't remember which one it was, I was using a lot of university resources that are open, free resources.
So what I do now, I just have my website or I had before,
right.
And I put my notes on it so students
yep.
could use it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what a lot of our teachers do too, is they make their PowerPoints and they go through and create those examples.
Mm-hmm.
And that first year, the first 2 years really, it's definitely, it takes more time, especially that first year when you're building up your resources. You know, after that year, it's just going back in and sort of modifying.
How
do you deal with the transit population where kids are going to come in? Obviously, in the beginning, you're going to have to teach them the use of the technology. And then you got a kid who comes in 6 weeks afterwards that's added to your class, and he hasn't seen technology once.
The first 3 years that we were open, what we did is for our entire school is we took the first week of school, students did not, freshmen do not take their computers home because we want them to sort of learn how to use them appropriately. The first 2 weeks of school were spent primarily working on PowerPoint, Word documents, how to use a website, how to search for things. That's how we did it for our first 2 years. This year we did it a little bit differently. Someone want to jump in and kind of what we looked at for that?
Freshmen, so. Basically, we took it upon the freshman core teachers to, during that first week, really teach a lot of the, all of my lessons had, even though I was doing content, I had a backdrop of teaching them how a certain lesson with the computer. And then in our advisory, so we still had the advisory a little bit, which is our homeroom sort of, they would learn iCal and the calendaring, and they'd learn the things that they didn't need to necessarily be taught by us, but I would show them how to work the websites that I have individually. I would get them set up, and I just took that first week I knew was going to be longer than in a traditional classroom where I didn't have to worry about a computer. And it worked out really, really good, because then by the second week, everyone's really good. And now, I actually have students that are really good at it and identified each class. And like, example, we had students transfer over from the other high school. We just pair them up. They help the other kids out. They have a little bit of like a one-day kind of, this is what the tech department kind of introduces to them. And then I just have other students kind of, the person they're sitting next to, or I put them next to somebody that really knows how to use the technology well, and they just help them out.
Tutoring type technology.
It works really well, because they're really, really good at helping each other out, even the kids that you wouldn't imagine, but they actually do a good job of helping out those new students, because they understand technology is a little bit different, and also they don't want to be slowed down by the new kids, so they want to get them on the right page and get them moved on. So
we decided to move to, rather than just focusing on that, kind of running through the same sort of tutorials with every student that first week, we allowed the teachers to kind of pick the ones that they were using the most in their classrooms to make it more relevant and sort of embedded in how they would open up their classroom for the first day if we weren't using the technology. For kids who are coming in also too, we do it like a one-day crash course. We kind of pair them up too, and a lot of times we'll have students run them through that process and actually use our kids to do that rather than one of our teachers or person on campus. Our kids are actually going through it, new students through that. Blended.
I was going to say, one of the things that we also did in terms of this year, since we've gotten away from the tech training and we're embedding it in content, we did provide a list of what we thought the most essential things were to each of the teachers and asked them to try to cover each of these skills in the first week, and things like how to print, how to save, how to find it after you saved it, how to know where you saved it.
I
did
training.
Okay, so we did provide that list to teachers and ask them, please embed this within your content in the next 2 weeks to try to make sure we can get all those bases.
And I also have, just as for the transient student, I have a little welcome letter for any new student that I get. And it's just, I give it to them. It has all the websites that they need.
Logins.
And that way they have it all printed out for my class right as they walk in the door, and so they can actually take a little bit of time that first day and get to know it all. So it's a little pre-planning, but we do have, kind of think about, we're going to have those kids, especially bouncing back and forth from the two high schools. We have a little bit of a transient population.
And when we first opened, from what we thought of what the kids would be like, given the world that they grow up in, we assumed that they would be very competent with computers. And they came in and they were fantastic at email and iTunes. But just about everything else we wanted to use, we ended up having to spend a lot of time teaching.
Yeah, their productivity skills were low.
Colin, so we have a call back.
Okay. We talked about the students. What about substitutes? Do you find that they have to have special qualifications? I know we don't use technology all the time, but special qualifications, they have to understand the school, long-term subs, how does that kind of relate to
that's where our websites come in handy. I mean, my mantra, no offense to anyone who's ever been a sub, is assume a sub knows nothing and has complete lack of any knowledge of anything and is just there as a warm body. That's what I tell my kids. And so they know, all of our kids here at least know, that they're to go to our websites. And everything, at least if we're absent, that's where we post it. I know me, this is my blog up here for my honors class. We use blogs instead of, some people use websites, but I'm HTML deficient. I don't even know how to use it if I try. So I use WordPress, which is a wonderful, simple, anybody can do it type of blog. And this is what we did on Friday. Basically simple. And I do have bellwork, classwork, homework. It's all up there daily. So no surprises. I have calendars, so if kids need to, where they were absent, they can go and click on the date and see what they had. If there's a leak, like for example, the video questions, this is a Word document. We had an issue with our copier, so I couldn't copy the questions, so they had to copy them onto paper. And these were for these two little videos that we were watching on World War I. And, you know, so I just tell my sub, my kids know they need to go to this daily for one. But if I have a sub, if I'm gone for golf, they know my expectations, and they know I'll kill them if they ask. And if a sub says, "Oh no, I've actually had a sub," and I can you put one, say, "No, we're gonna watch a movie instead," and they're like, "There's stuff on the blog. She'll kill us." And so they rebelled against the sub and did their assignment because it's up there.
I wouldn't. Whole idea.
They don't want to make me mad. I'm happy and blonde. Not that way when I get mad.
I will say in sub time, I print this out for my subs so they know, and any websites I want the kids to go to, I try to print a little screenshot of that so that the sub, when they're walking around the classroom, knows what they should be seeing. And if they're seeing something that's not those things, then they need to be worried and they need to check in with that student.
This is something that I was going to say, the next thing on the PowerPoint was our management system. What we did our first couple of years is we used
StudyWiz. It started out wonderfully, and then they changed it and made it really cumbersome.
Plus, it had a lot of aspects that we just weren't using. It had a lot of tools built into it that we weren't using. It also is a product of, let's see, where are they out of New Zealand. And it is used in a lot of schools around the world, but it's set up to use some standardized file formats that aren't used by American publishers. So all the content and stuff that you should be able to import into it, all the test banks, all that kind of stuff, we couldn't use.
So the kids had to have a login, and that made it really difficult for transition. If you had a new kid come in, sometimes it took a week for them to get that login information, or even for them to get put into our class in StudyWiz by the tech department had to do that. And so we just kind of, the history department rebelled at the beginning of last year and went to this blog system, which is run by WordPress. If you do blogging, WordPress is a really nice, simple blog program. And that's what I do with my stuff. And then I go, "Can I have your phone, please?" At the end of the day, Mr. Robinson have it. This just became really easy, and for me, I like to have that daily agenda. So my kids, I teach freshmen, they need that kind of real organized, this is what's happening, and also for freshman parents, they can just go, I get them this URL, they don't have to have a login. As soon as they come in, the new student comes in, I hand them that sheet, the URL's there, they enter it in their computer, they bookmark it, and they're ready to go. They don't need anything more than that.
Is this a free service?
WordPress.com is actually free. We have, this is WordPress.org, which is served, we have it kind of like a server here, but WordPress.com is free. And I use WordPress.com actually for my golf website. So you can just go and create an account. It's really easy to use. You can upload Word documents, upload PDFs. You can create pages so it looks like a website instead of a blog. And so I have review games, actually, which there's a great website for those of you who, which is purposegames.com. You can create your own educational games. Purposegames.com, awesome. And so I create review games for when I was doing countries in Europe, and it really helped them. They know their countries now, someone's like, "I don't even know them." But they, I can create my own little review games so they can go through that. And then lastly, so that you can move on, I want me to go over my other.
Just that the one other that you do for.
I have three, I teach two classes, but I have three websites. This was my honors. I also teach regular world history. It looks a little different, so I can tell I'm on. And you can obviously customize and make it look all cool, and it's really, really easy. Like I said, I'm HTML deficient. I don't know how to use it, but yet I can work with this. And for my inclusion students, I have a separate one for the world history, or my resource students that really need the extra assistance. And it looks almost identical. My picture's a little off, so I'd go back and fix that. The only thing that's different is there's this right here, but nobody ever really notices that. And then the information that sometimes I put is different. And then I have a place for places for me to put lectures, so PowerPoints, so the students that need your printed copy of your lecture, you can just tell them to go download it later. So they don't have to, especially those kids that are really nervous about people knowing that they get extra help, which we all have those that aren't very outgoing, outspoken about it, that's there for them. And then if I have a modified assignments, it just would go where it would look identical on the outside, and so nobody knows on the front, none of my kids know who's what. I just basically, once I identify those students that need that different site, I just slip on their computer, change the bookmark, and let them know later what I did. And then they're all, oh yeah, and they all of a sudden they start doing a whole lot better, and their grades go up, and their content knowledge goes up, and they're no longer that kid in the back of the classroom who's driving you nuts because he doesn't understand the material.
Teacher blogs is really, really, really different than what we've been doing in the past. And so this has really helped out. Each teacher has every teacher has their own blog. And this is where they're posting their information for their classes. And so it's really helped out with parents being able to see what's going on in the classroom. This is what the homework is tonight.
And everybody does a little different.
Yeah. I
have a question that leads into lesson plans and posting, and sharing, putting up. Do you use gloves for that? I mean, is this pretty much what you're doing? Or
we have, there's another session going on right now, district wide.
Yeah.
We've been sort of developing a bank of lesson planning. But as far as teachers, most of the teachers are doing their planning right on online with this.
This is it, and it's not like you have to duplicate this for a bunch of different things.
Well, I was going to say, and it kind of addresses that a little bit too, is a lot of us have more than one source of information for students or for the other places. I've got a blog for each of my three different classes. I also have a class website that I'd had previously that I'm maintaining that basically mirrors most of the content that's on the blog. So if they can't get to one, they can get to the other. Plus all the assignment information goes into iCal, and the students have iCal subscriptions, so they get all that information there. Plus we have the grading program that has the details of assignments and things like that in there too. So they have five or six places to see where all their assignments are, so they never have an excuse for not knowing for what they were supposed to use.
And for English, in addition to the blog, I also have a wiki space, which anybody can, you can do a wiki space, it's free. You can protect it, the kids can sign up, and I'll show you real quick. For seniors and my graphic novels, we do reviewing on the wiki space.
Can you go back to previous dates? On that, like by pressing the test counter, like if they're absent, say they're really sick, yes, and they go back to Tuesday.
Yes. The way that blogs work is they sort of build on what's currently there. So everything that's from the beginning of the year is all there. So for teachers for next year, they just need to go back in and modify
change the date or modify. Like if I'm going to use that same, I've already done that. I'm using the exact same lesson plan. I really liked it. It worked well. I just changed the post date. I didn't have to retype anything. All of my uploads, the documents that I had were still in there. They were attached because it uploaded to the server, and I was good to go. And
So for the wiki space, for example, we're doing a senior memoir project. This is kind of the last semester, so we do a little reflection. And really what we use this form for is a revision and peer editing. So what they do is they actually go on there, they upload their document, and then what happens is when they walk in Friday mornings, they take a name, they download a person's document, and then they post it back saying revise. And in Word, what happens is Word is great, especially for English, because it has a reviewing toolbar, and you can do all the corrections based on Word. And so
So what do? You just go back to Wikispace and post the revised, and then kids can pull up the Word document quickly, accessible, and say, oh, I did miss that the, or I didn't capitalize, or I didn't spell. So it's a real quick access, especially for all you English teachers or social studies, or if you deal with the writing genre, it's a real quick instance, a real quick genre to post your revision.
You don't need to turn it in for that.
And you know, and this
anybody
is a,
can use it.
This is a free service with the Wikispaces. It's free. Okay?
And especially for teachers.
Yeah, and it's a great resource. I mean, right here, I can do period 1, 3, 4, and my graphic novels class as well. And they just go directly to their site. Kids, sometimes they mess up what goes in there. That's all right. I can just go to my history. If I edit this page, I can go to history. And anybody can edit, kids can always edit their pages. But as a teacher, you know, you kind of worry about that and you go, oh, what's going on there?
Send you a notification anytime anybody edits too.
Right, exactly.
Now, can you protect that so only your students see it, or the world
can
see it?
So I can go back and say, okay, how did your thing get erased? All right, let's see the history of it. Let's see who looked at yours. Let's see who downloaded yours. Let's see who made any changes. So you can see, like, Chris, Jordan checked out his, okay? Then there was something he uploaded. Travis obviously made some changes. So you can go back and say, okay, that's fine. Now I know what's happening.
And that's the same with the WordPress. You can in the settings, you can set it that people can search you through Yahoo, find your website, or you can lock it down to just, you know, if you give that URL out, then they can see it. But it, like, I don't have mine. If you search for it, I don't have it available because I'm that way. But if I send it out to parents and they can find it, anyone can get on it. There's no password.
And also with the Wikispace, I just want to put this out quickly. You can have a discussion board if you wanted to. I mean, it's just, there's so many free services out there. Just go out there and explore. Let's see what's suitable for like the content.
I can ask
them. Okay.
Well, I just had a final follow-up question regarding the digital simulations used for science or math. Any examples?
Not any one particular website that I can think of for science. We looked at the, was it Explore Learning Gizmos initially, and they have some really cool stuff on there, but not enough for us to justify the subscription cost. So we tend to find the free resources.
Do you use Virtual Lab?
No.
Yeah.
Not currently.
Is Second Life TeamGrid used at all?
I don't know what that is.
Then no. No.
They use their virtual environment. A lot of high schools around the nation are beginning to use it. A lot of colleges as well. You can do a lot of kind of 3D virtual simulations, such as instead of learning area or geometry, you know, through writing, you can create a 3D any type of object. You can interact with other 3D avatars. Second Life, but the team, there's a special version for teams.
Okay, good.
And
one big thing is whatever you can think of to do with your computer, so again, the kid said so much more. It's definitely, we didn't get really to the classroom management aspect too much of it, but I mean, there's lots of cool things that I'm like, oh, this would be great to use. Yeah, and Johnny would really go off the deep end. And that's like the purpose games. They actually have a chat feature. And so I had a conversation with them about, okay, make sure you're not abusing that because we have opened it up. The tech office has allowed us to see this website. But if this, you know, the chatting is, you're using that as a chat in class, then it will get closed down and we'll all cry and it'll be upsetting. So, you know, it's just kind of the teaching them how to use the technology appropriately is always fine. But that purpose lines. Second Life.
I'm not sure. I don't know what was next on the. I haven't seen the agenda yet.
Yeah,
so
we're 5 minutes over.
The next one's supposed to start at
11:15. Any last minute questions before everybody runs out, or feel free to we'll hang out for a while if you have individual
questions.
Thank you very much.